Hello, hello, hello! Before we begin the season finale of Back Again, we have a listener limerick for Daisy. While limericks are going to be put on hold during the season break, if you'd like to find out more, you can check out ko-fi.com/backagainpodcast. This one is for Daisy, about springtime in Rhizaea. When you think it will never be warm, when night comes so early you mourn, you just have to wait. The bitter abates, and the flowers will bloom as was sworn. Thank you so, so much, dear Daisy. And now, on to the episode. Back again, episode 29. Old Friends. Akea Yanura's palace was a small thing. It was meant for war, for protection, to keep people out, to keep people in. It reminded me of Helm's Deep, in that way that everything reminded me of something fantastical that we had spun out of this world. It was a place to keep people safe. It was a place to stand against an incoming army. That was fair. If anyone came up from the fronts looking for war, she was on the path of destruction up to the palace. It was good to be able to tuck your people inside until the danger was through. That was one of the reasons Leander had trusted her. She cared for her people. When danger came, she wanted to be able to keep them close. But that was no comfort for us, riding in towards tall ochre walls. Fire cemented brick turned 18 colors of fall. It was not reassuring. No matter what Leander whispered to us both about caring for the villages, caring for the lay people, as they dismounted their horse and called up to the watchmen on the top of the wall, their hands splayed wide like senators over Caesar's body, as if they were saying, "We have come to lay low a tyrant. This is an attempt to beg peace." The doors rumbled open. Shrieking wood bleached white by time, we rode inside. The laird's home sat at the very middle. Even she was not forgiven that indulgence of safety. Turrets rose up from rounded towers, flat roofs fell into one another, sloping down, baking in the late afternoon sun. The impression was of something that had stood and would continue to stand for many more years, impenetrable. Impossible. "It would be a good base," Callia said. She framed the fortress between two fingers, then smushed it. "If she cooperates."
"When?" Leander said. "When she does. Do not fall to Algerthon now, Callia."
Callia made a noise of disagreement. She spurred her horse forward. Inside, we were greeted at the door. We were asked to divulge our weapons in a show of faith, a thing Callia laughed in the face of. I clung to my sword. Leander, ever the diplomat, our poet, smiled in the face of the laird's daughter and her staff and said, "There have been no deals made. It is just the three of us and I come unarmed. Come now. What could my kings do?" It was smooth talk, golden, paved with trust and good intentions. It was always hard to resist Leander when they tried. We were not removed from our swords. We continued inside. Okea's daughter followed us, beside us, and introduced herself as Oriana, the heir to House Yanura, should the people will it. That was an interesting line, even for us. I paused. "What?" I asked, in my very best Rhizaean. is meant by that. The girl couldn't have been much older than us, despite the way that her style tried to age her. Long, dark hair folded itself up and away from her face, woven through carmine-colored ribbon. Her dress reached the ground and pulled, like the most inconvenient of mine ever had back at the palace, and a meticulously embroidered belt sat low across her hips. Her sleeves trumpeted nearly all the way to her knees. She dressed like someone trying desperately to be taken seriously, like Cassian dressing for strategy meetings, like me fiddling with my hair before going to court, and it worked. It aged her. Until she smiled and put a finger to her lips. Oh, Elahida, that is yet to be seen. Inside. The guards paled off as our steps echoed toward what Oriana said was the formal dining room. The other lairds were already there. We were the last to arrive, a thing that made Callia's hands twitch almost as much as the presence of the guards. I could tell what she wanted to say.
They have already had a chance to barter among themselves, to seal their own deals and create a strategy against us. Now we must talk. Now we must try to make our way around their bargains.
They would not be kind. If they'd had the time to prepare, they would be looking for the places where he could fail. It felt like a betrayal, but we were all on edge already. The boy was a secret, and that only did not fall into a lie because of the hazy grounds of omission. This was just another drop in the bucket of things too close to breaking. But Callia said none of those things. Instead, voice clipped, she said,
I hope that they are still ready to listen.
Oriana stopped, then, and turned back to us. She hesitated, once, twice, before her face broke, betraying her age.
Be cautious tonight, she said. Not all of the Laird's have come with open minds, my mother's intentions aside.
Then she tilted her head, looking at Leander.
We used to play together. Do you remember?
Leander's head tilted to match hers, then fell past it.
Was this the long season where...
Then they swallowed. This was a hesitation I did not often see in them.
After my...
Yes, said the Laird's daughter.
Yes, it was. I am still sorry for that. It was nothing to do with you or your actions, Leander said gently, but in a way that was not entirely honest.
I knew them just well enough to understand it, I mean.
It's the same feeling as guilt, turned inside out.
Guilt and its sister, blame. The two make their homes in your heart and your head and stretch themselves into you so completely that it is hard to tell where you end. The guilt that comes from being responsible for a death, the blame that comes from looking into the face of someone who you feel could have prevented it. Leander cleared their throat.
It had nothing to do with you.
Oriana bowed her head.
Gratinok.
She led us into the great dining room where, just as had been said, the lairds were already gathered around a long table. It stretched nearly the whole length of the hall. Wax dripped from chandeliers and melted into long streaks from taper candles the colour of tallow. No one stood but Achaea.
"My daughter," she said to the lairds. And Leander Feltrea. Callia, for and of the people of Rhizea and Vatikina Alhida. Elias," she paused, "who I do not know the full name of, as it seems."
It felt odd to offer my family name, my last name, from here, from this world. No one had asked for it but Cassian way back at the beginning, and what had I said? Just Elias.
"Elias Alexander," I said, because I did not have to follow old patterns. "Yes."
Around this collection of silk and wool and thick, shining embroidery, even in the clothes that Callia had made for us, we looked terribly underdressed. There was something too simple about the colors. Common dye is easily recognizable from food scraps and wild plants, and even the embroidery, so precious to me back in our tent, with its daisy chain flowers and delicate creeping vines, were noticeably the work of a hobbyist. Against what they wore, I tried to tell myself that it didn't matter. That it was better to be dressed in clothes that did not misrepresent us, or our people, or where we came from, but of course, worrying was easier. The palace had taught me the importance of appearances. Lairds thought like the palace, thought like those with something to show because they had something to lose. We had the same. Something to lose. A lot to lose, but we also had more to gain. More than any of them. The three empty chairs were not side by side. They were dispersed throughout the room, two opposite sides of the table, still within speaking distance of each other, and the other at Achaea Yenora's right side. Callia let out a breath between her teeth. I felt a panic. My Rhizean had exponentially improved over the months beside the both of them, but I'd never embarrassed myself more than with Laird's like this, who spoke a more formal version of the language I'd become acquainted to the colloquialism of.
"An opportunity," the Laird's daughter said, "to talk amongst them all."
Leander said,
"Are the seats assigned? My mother, Laird of House Yenora, has offered you the seat beside her as a show of good faith."
"Good faith," Callia said, bite in the words. But her hand snaked out to find mine. Once again, it was like I could hear the both of their thoughts.
"It is a show of faith, Capitan," Leander would say, loose on the word captain,
trying to remind Callie of her duty and how far she'd come and what she'd stood for, rather than cement her in her youthfulness and her own worry at not being enough.
"It is lucky," Callie would say, "that our Elhidida is near someone who can cover her mistakes." But she wouldn't put venom into Elhidida.
"Are you not worried?" I would say, if this were a place that we could speak freely. "I'm nervous about what they want from us, and they're separating us."
This, Callia did answer, without my opening my mouth once. "It is tradition to separate the bargaining party so all may ask questions."
Her hand was tight in mine. She did not like it any more than I did. There was an invisible second sentence there.
Also, to make it easier for the occupiers, if we need to be killed.
We took our places. Mine, between two old men who could have been my father, my grandfather. They were older than the king or queen, though the one on my right, not by many years, the one on my left, leered.
Vatekina elegida,
he said. As the first course, fruits, paled into elaborate shapes, were brought out on platters before us. I blinked, hard, staring at the flesh of a golden fruit, peppered with tiny green seeds that had been carved into the shape of a tiny winged bird. It took me too long to place it. It was the same as the one I'd made Cassian buy for me at the poet's tournament, Elihita. Kalia's voice cut through the haze. Elihita, our friend, is asking after our strengths. The look on the laird's face told me that that was not quite what he had said, but I missed it completely. Again, it was Leander's voice in my head. Shimmer. Roreala. So I did. I smiled. I tried to delight. In my very best Rhysaean, I explained the ways that I'd come to love the people of Rhysaea, the Phrethim. I explained the small battles that we'd won and tried to elaborate on what we'd do with the backing of the Laird's, on what we could do with greater power than we could offer on our own. I have seen how the kings lie, I said. The kings removed the eye of the Menstrana de Elihida from my daring to ask what secrets they'd kept from us. She has escaped and lived to be stronger only because of the care of the Phrethim. I paused, trying to make sure I did not miss my words. That is what we wish to rebuild this country on. Care. Do away with the tithing systems that you were forced to pass on to your tenants. Stop making children soldiers. Protect those who we are meant to, that you, as Laird's, have an obligation to. Callie cut me off with a sharp smile. I recognized my misstep a second too late. I'd dared to speak of obligations.
You know of the prophecy, she said. And the Elihida on our side proves that the old magic is as well. It is a sign of prosperity. It is a sign of victory. The kings do not have that, and without her, they could not hope to win.
A wise person would consider this. Well, said the Laird next to Kalia, the head of her bird fruit spared onto her fork. You speak boldly. Kalia inclined her head.
I make a suggestion. That my Laird is welcome to take at her discretion.
I balked before Kalia. I didn't know that she could behave like that. Discretionary. Bowing before someone else, even just a little bit. But she knew what she wanted. And she knew how to get it. I shot a glance down the table at Leander. Seated beside Okea Eudora, I shouldn't have worried. They were electric. Their face glowed in the candlelight, hands gesturing wildly. Leander drummed a rhythm onto the table, something that sent all the plates rattling all the way down to our middle. It wasn't a song so much as a call to action.
Change is coming, whether or not the kings want it,
Leander said in the silence that followed.
The magic is here. We are here. Gea Yanura and all the people of her house have heard tale of our brilliance. We have raided the palace successfully twice. The prince hides at the house of a city laird, a boy just as afraid. The kings have not been seen in months.
That is because the kings are dead, said the laird beside Calia. Her voice was smooth. They died in the fire that Elahida started. I froze. My grip tightened on my fork. I did not dare to speak. Leander stuttered to a halt. The lairds all looked towards me.
There are always sacrifices that come from war. They took the Minstrana's eye, and the Minstrana is dear to Elias, to the Elahida. The kings killed our poet's sister and starved the mother of a dear friend. How many times can we say that one life is worth more than an entire people's? The kings were Rex Tyrannus. What else do you expect to befall such a person? One who acts out of cruelty, out of fear, out of a desire to control others to such an extent that they will not hesitate to crush them to teach a lesson.
The lairds went silent. You condone this action? The burning of kings? I couldn't point out which laird had spoken. It came from somewhere down the table out of my sight. Calia stared at me as she said it.
Let the Elahida end the king's futures. Every single one.
I thought of what we'd said of the boy, should we find him. What we'd said of the prince. For Isaiah. For you. She'd meant it. She would protect me. Even to hear. You speak of futures for all Rhysaea, and yet you end others.
It was the same laird, bird head on a pike.
It is what they have been doing to the Frethem, I snapped, finding my words. What they've been doing to all of the common people who dared to get in their way. I raided villages with the prince when I stood with the palace. I am responsible for the deaths of so many. So many people. People who did not deserve it. This is the thing that I will regret most until the day I die and become something else. But I do not regret their deaths. Not when they passed down the order to destroy so many others. Not when they would have done the same to all of the people I love. This is why, I said. This is why we have come to you, Rex et Poeta et Soldat. I have the magic. We usher in the prophecy. I stood too long with the kings to call them anything other than tyrants. I know what they do, and I implore you to... My breath caught as Calia laser-eyed me, trying to convince me to watch my words. I implore you to think for yourselves. Consider twice what things you hear that might be lies.
Lies? Scoffed the laird beside me, the one that leered. It is interesting that you would warn us against lies, Vatakina Elahida.
My hand stilled on the table. I do not understand what you are saying, Laird. My Rhysaean is not what it could be. Forgive me.
I dared to lean down the table to catch Leander in my sight. Their face was carefully still. Intentionally blank, perfunctory, and confused, Callia had not even twitched.
I received an interesting announcement from the king. And here, the Laird beside Callia said king with the sick certainty of a trap. Of someone who had not listened once. 3 days ago, came directly from the throne. It was delivered by someone that the three of you know well. Cassian
was nearby. Cassian had... Oh, no. The Laird pulled a flyer from the folds of her dress, pinching the corners between two fingers. She smoothed it, considering on the table before her, before sliding it toward Callia. Callia's eyes flicked over it, considering a little too desperate. I watched as her brow furrowed harder, harder, settling into the hard lines she'd always met me with at the beginning of us. The son of here and there, Callia read. Carefully, tone measured. The Rhysaean was Filius de Aia et Ai. She cleared her throat and looked up at the Lairds. In a voice that was not at all for them, she said,
"You are showing me a picture of a boy. I do not understand what you want me to do with this.
You need my explanation. You have even less power than we thought," the Laird said. She sounded smug.
"Is that not what your poet is for, divination?"
She sounded out that last word, taking it slow.
"Unmiux vix traien."
I say divination here, listeners, as that's what I'd later learned she'd meant, but at the time I'd interpreted it as something closer to secret keeping. I hadn't been wrong. The most literal translation I could manage would be solitary visions, and that first phrase, unyux, solitary, she'd lilted like a curse.
"The son of here and there," snapped
Okeanura's daughter, standing up so fast her chair screeched,
"is not the Elegida." "Cassius Rex says otherwise," drawled the Laird beside Callia, and the doors at the far end of the hall swung open wide.
Three boys stalked into the hall, late afternoon light from behind the doors casting them hazy silhouettes. One of them I recognized on sight. Taller than me, shorter then the one off his left, a mess of hair and perfect posture and deliberate steps, he'd been mine. We'd belonged to each other once, and even after things had changed and changed and changed again, you don't forget about the people that you've poured love into, not for anything. Not even after the end of it all. It hurts, of course. It's a different sort of pain. A different sort of fracturing. This is how I lost him. Again. And again and again. This is all the times that I let him pull a rib from my chest. This was the last time that it came as a surprise, listener. Anything that he did. I stopped even dreaming of forgiveness after this. It was Cassian. In the doorway. Of course. And off his right, Io from the far shore, dressed in gold, face painted with stars. And then there came the part that was new. This
is the part that scared me, that had Callia slammed to her feet, that had a nervous laugh lip from Leander's throat and dance out into the air, still musical, so anxious, because beside them, dear listeners, there was a boy. Just a boy. He was brown-skinned and angular. His hair was buzzed, his eyes were deep hollows in his face. He dressed like a mirror of Cassian, like a mirror of Io, all three of them fucking matching in the laurel wreaths on their heads in their war paint. Two streaks of gold on one cheek, two streaks on the opposite side of their forehead. He was wearing armor, but it didn't fit him quite right. It didn't take me long to see what it was. It was my fucking armor. The set I'd left back at the palace, engraved, hardly battle-worn, largely decorative. You don't have intricately engraved armor if you're meant to get into the thick of things. It's regalia. It's for standing back and watching on the sidelines. Half the time, I hadn't even worn mail underneath where my joints gaped through. It was why I'd gotten stabbed. He did, though. He was taller than me, and the space between the breastplate and the beginning of his pants felt like miles. Clearly, Cassian wanted to keep him safe, but more than that, Cassian wanted to show me how easily he had someone step into my place. "The kings are dead," the Laird had said. Cassian hadn't mentioned it to me at all. Not that I should have expected the truth from him. Lies by omission were still lies, even when done on both ends, but still. It didn't help my heart that there was no one left to push the blame from his actions onto. This was Cassian. This, from here on out, listeners, was all Cassian.
"Hello, Elias,"
Cassian said plainly. It was stilted, said in English, but all the Lairds knew hello. I couldn't help it. I searched the way he said my name for some idea of how he was coming before us to work towards a conclusion? To see a reason? Finally, I shouldn't have been stupid enough to want as much, but oh, listeners, I always kept searching him for a change. I told you that when this began. He was my Hamartia, but of course, that doesn't make it a happy ending. It just meant we both understood how best to cut each other apart. And of course, we all know how this story ends. Callia snarled at the Laird's.
"We come before you in good faith, and you bring the tyrant before us."
"Good faith," the Laird beside Callia said, "would be to have told us about the magic boy. It would have been to explain that your Elahida was not alone in the prophecy. You come to us as dishonest traitors."
"He doesn't have magic," I gasped. "Not yet. The prince is lying, too."
Across the room, Cassian tilted his head.
"Interesting that you'd know that, Elias,"
he said in English. Was this for the boy's benefit?
Mine? I didn't know anymore. I didn't even know if the boy spoke English, really. There was no reason to believe he was from the same place that I had grown up. He was far away, but I knew he was looking at me. There was no other place his eyes could be.
Cassian said, "Last chance."
Last chance. Jesus Christ. We'd had our fight.
We promised to kill each other. And yet... I walked into a trap. And he offered out a hand and said to me, "Last chance." Dear listeners, do you remember back at the beginning how I'd said that I could never let go of Cassian? I'd called it my hamartia. As it turned out, I was his, too. I shook my head. I drew my sword. "Furum ep," I began, tightening my hands on my grip, but as I tried to get the magic out, it was like it was ripped from my lungs, the words on fishhooks and the barbs tearing at my throat. I wheezed into the silence, the void where my words were. "Furum ep. Furum ep." Across the room, the boy breathed a little easier. Magic. Just the faintest gasp winked around his hands. I could see Cassian's mouth form the word.
"Interesting."
I could see the cogs turning in his head.
"This is your last chance to surrender,"
Cassian said.
"We will be merciful to traitors. I have sent an army to your Fretum camp. You are surrounded, Tyrannus. Give yourselves up. Come without a fight, and you will live to see the morning."
Callia snarled.
"Liar!"
Her shoulders were squared, but I could hear the way her voice caught on the syllable. "He was here, after all. Clearly our plan wasn't infallible. We'd been betrayed by the Lairds already. Who was to say that there were no others?" Io laughed, and it was so unlike Leander's. A knife through the air, all silver and metal tang.
"He isn't lying, Tyrannus. Why do you think your pathetic camp has been allowed to grow so large? I encouraged the king to set a honeypot. All of the traitors have been drawn out. You were given just enough leeway to believe you could succeed."
Again. Again, the fucking story. The camp growing larger, giddiness, our success, the threat them growing, the hope. How many raids had I gone out on with Cassian? He'd always seemed to know where the rebels were back when it was us. How had we not noticed the sudden quiet? Because we'd wanted to believe in it. Because we'd wanted to believe. And Io had set it up. Had convinced Cassian to hold off and let us get close. "I don't think he's lying," I bit out to Callia in Rhysaean. My voice was still shredded from the theft. I tried again. "Furum zet." Again, that fishhook sat pulling. I nearly threw up from the loss. It was like losing my balance, like the world falling away, like holding my organs in my hands. I was without magic for a second. Just a second, and I felt like I was dying. And again, across the room, it went to the boy. He flexed the fingers of his free hand, the one without the sword. "Can't use my magic," I muttered to Callia. "I can't do it. I can't do it. We need to run."
"Leander," she hissed, low,
They are too far away. They have to reach us first.
Elias,
Cassian called. And then in English,
please.
I looked at him. My Cassian. His hair had gotten long.
I knew so much about him, down to the name of the town where the gash in his left pauldron had come from, even though I couldn't see it as anything more than a shadow in the metal from here.
Elias. Please.
He held out a hand.
Now, Kalia said, and whistled sharp through her teeth. She launched herself across the table, sliding over and drawing both swords in one smooth motion to land by my side. Leander scrambled up onto the table, too, taking the most direct path directly toward Kalia and I, kicking food out of the way and making a mad scramble. I pulled out my sword. It was reacting. Now, maybe to the boy. It had to be to the boy. It hadn't ever done this before without my prompting. It glowed gold-green with magic. It hummed in a way that said, "Let me go. Not I am yours." I gripped it tighter, snarling, and tried one more time to clear a path toward the door. "Viens," I said. And this time, when the tugging started, I pulled back harder. I snapped at the cords, ripped at the fish hooks in my chest. The word came out more scream, but it worked. The guards staggered back, slamming out of our path. "I've got Leander," I said. They were nearly to us.
"Go. Start moving. Go." "If you fight for the kings," Cassian bellowed, "bring the Elahida to me. As for the other two, kill the tyrants."
But we didn't stop. Not out the doors, not through the hallways, not through any of it. I didn't let go of Leander's hand, and anyone in front of us, Kalia did what she needed to. We burst through the gates. We found our horses. We rode hard in the direction of home, in the direction of the camp. But what could we do? What could three of us, just three of us, do? The Fretim surrounded. The camp marched on. Rhea at home, and Iolo at home, and Hast, and Nat, and all of our friends, and the boy behind us, Cassian behind us. I could feel the boy now. He had a part of my magic. I could track his path behind us, getting closer, catching up on lost time. I could only assume that he could feel me, too. I could only assume that Cassian was with him. But what else could we do? What else could we do? We ran.
Thank you for listening to season 2 of Back Again, Back Again. We'll be back soon. Back Again, Back Again is written and produced by me, Abigail Eliza. If you're enjoying the show, please consider leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. If you'd like to hear more about the show, visit us on Instagram or Tumblr at Back Again Podcast, or on TikTok at Abigail Eliza Writes. Our outro music is Nightingales by Pierce Murphy from the album To Japan and is licensed under an attribution license. The song was retrieved from freemusicarchive.org. Visit the description of this episode for full copyright information and a link to the page. Sound effect attribution, similarly, can be found in the episode description. Writing season 2 has been something else. Season 1 of Babbo was the first project that I ever saw to completion in a real and tangible way, and watching all of you react to Season 2 through fan art, fic, and freakouts in the Discord and on Tumblr has been an honor and a pleasure. Thank yous are in order to everyone who's interacted with the show, and the number at this point is too big to fit into Pierce Murphy's Nightingales. I see you, I love you, and I am so grateful for your support. There's a special shout-out needed for Nat and Joy, most of all, for being the oldest and most consistent fans of the show. Nat, you know what you've done. Joy, you were right. I'm glad you saw it coming. The gays will stay winning. To Chloe, for being my ride or die of podcasting. I'm always grateful for your pictures and your enthusiasm. You are adored. So much of this is thanks to you. To everyone on Patreon, Em, Zoe, Sam, Mac, Adrian, Ellen, Taras, Axel, John, Liam, Ty, Mel, Daisy, Nat, Christian, Rowan, and Daniel, thank you so, so much. You help make this possible and also help me buy groceries, which is a thing that I will not stop being grateful for. To Mac and Sophia and Ella, though you'll still never hear this, for being my most dear of people. I love you. And I'll always want you by my side. Most of all, to you, listener, who made it all the way to the end of this. I hope that where you are right now, it is sunny outside, or the sky is full of stars, and that when you step out into it, you feel at peace. Please remember to be kind to those around you. Most of all, please remember to be kind to yourself. You are so, so very loved. I hope you have a wonderful day.